Campus FM presents Talking Eds, a program brought to you by students from the International Masters in Adult Education for Social Change, who are studying currently at the University of Malta.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Talking Eds, presented by students of International Master in Adult Education for Social Change, Cohort 2. I'm Aibanu from Xinjiang, China, your host for the day. I hope you will enjoy your listening with us. Today we have Dania from Honduras and Amelia from Canada.
Hello, audience. It's a pleasure to be with you again in this new radio show.
Hello. Thank you for having us.
Before we start, we will listen to an excerpt of a very famous movie. Maybe you can identify which one is it.
And it was as good as his word. He wrote two letters a week instead of one. In 1959, the state senate finally clued into the fact they couldn't buy him off with just a $200 check. Appropriations committee voted an annual payment of $500 just to shut him up. And you'd be amazed how far Andy could stretch it. He made deals with book clubs, charity groups. He bought remaindered books by the pound.
Treasure Island, Robert Louis
Stevenson, fiction, adventure.
What's next?
I got here auto repair and soap carving.
Trade skills and hobbies, goes under educational, stack behind you.
Count Monte Cristo.
That's Cristo, you dumb shit.
By Alexandre Dumas. Dumas.
Dumas. Dumas. You know what that's about? You'll like it. It's about a prison break.
We'll be able to file that on the educational, too. Oughtn't we?
The rest of us did our best to pitch in when and where we could. By the year Kennedy was shot, Andy had transformed a storage room smelling of rat turds and turpentine into the best prison library in New England.
Morgan Freeman narrating, Library in Prison. If you thought of Shawshank Redemption, you were right. We're talking about an important United States classic film that in 2015 was selected by the Library of Congress to be preserved in the National Film Registry for being culturally, historically, or aesthetically significant. But why did we bring this movie to the show? We found it particularly interesting to highlight the fact of Andy, the protagonist, was a great enthusiast of building a library in the prison, making so much efforts to get a budget and finally gathering his prison fellas to build and organize this new library. In this excerpt of the movie, we have a funny moment where one of the Andy's friends at prison could not read one of the titles of the new batch of books they were organizing. Yet, this moment is something revealing, where we can appreciate how Andy introduces to his friend into the world literature with Alexandre Dumas' book. Then, based on this, we can start discussing in depth our topic of the day, prison and adult education. So, back to you, Iban.
Prison education is also known as inmate education and correctional education. It is a general term in describing any educational activities occurring inside a prison. These educational activities include general education development classes, vocational training, and college courses. The overall goal of such activity is to prepare the prisoners for resettlement into life beyond the prison walls. It also serves the purpose of reducing recidivism.
This is a very interesting topic indeed. Aibanu, can you tell us a bit more about how prison education can benefit the prisoners both inside and outside of prison life?
Of course. First of all, prison education itself is a proof of the concept that education is a human right for everyone. The basic human right to education should not be deprived because of incarceration. having the opportunity to be educated in prison can be attributed to improve cognitive capacity, as well as reduce the experience of dehumanization. As pointed out by Stern in 2014, participating in an activity as commonplace as going to classes can make inmates feel human again. The feeling of treated as normal human being is often seen as one of the most powerful experiences of those whose life were positively transformed in the prison context. Besides, prison education is regarded as a way of coping with life both inside and outside of prison. Inside the prison, education can function as a distraction from inmates' negative emotions and keep them occupied. Outside the prison, education provides them the knowledge and skills needed in resettling into the society. Moreover, prison education is in general a preparation for employment after release.
That's true, Ibanu. But I guess the main purpose of prison education is to reduce that recidivism level and make sure people won't end up in jail over and over again. As indicated in most major research, prison education does have far-reaching impact in reducing recidivism level. A conclusion has been drawn that the higher the degree attained, the lower recidivism rate. Experian 2010. According to Experian, the vast majority of people locked in the United States prison do not have a high school diploma. The Institute for Higher Education Policy reported in 2011 that nearly 7 in 10 people who are formerly incarcerated will commit a new crime, and half will end up back in prison within 3 years. In these hard circumstances, educating prisoners is certainly of great significance in equipping them with knowledge and skills needed for readjust into the society, thus reduce the recidivism rate.
But from the economic perspective, isn't it a bit of overspending to invest more money on prison education while more people are still struggling to meet their basic needs?
That is a very good point, Ibanu. Thanks for bringing it up. I guess most of the people also have similar concerns, but surprisingly, studies find that prison education serves the purpose of long-term cost efficiency. The high cost of correctional spending is worsened by an astonishingly high national recidivism rate of 67.5%, which significantly contributes to the increasing prison population. A study by the Department of Policy Studies at the University of California at Los Angeles found that a $1 million investment in incarceration would prevent about 350 crimes, while that same investment in correctional education would prevent more than 600 crimes. As a result, correctional education is proved to be almost twice as cost-effective as incarceration. Nevertheless, only approximately 6% of correction spending was being used to pay for all prison programming, including educational programs in 2003. Education is a relatively low-cost program that could be provided to inmates. However, when looking simply at direct costs, it can be found that every dollar invested in a prison education program will ultimately save taxpayers between $4 and $5 in reincarceration costs.
Welcome back. Today we are talking about prison education, and we are going to explore another example of prison education.
Prison systems around the world are all vastly different. However, many follow the same model. Convicted citizens are locked up into a cell to serve time, stripped of their freedoms and many of their rights. How long they are there, the conditions they live in, and the access to services they have, such as education, are dependent on where they are imprisoned and why. A few countries, however, are doing things a little bit differently. Let's listen to an explanation of the prison model in Norway.
Firstly, the maximum sentence allowed in Norway is 21 years, even for crimes like murder. The death penalty for regular crimes was outlawed over a century ago and further abolished in 1979 for crimes like treason or mass murder. Even terrorist Anders Breivik, who killed 77 people in 2011 in the country's worst ever terror attack, was not eligible for the death penalty and sentenced to 21 years. Judges, however, can renew a prisoner's detention for 5 years at a time at the end of their sentence, leading to potential lifelong incarcerations. Breivik was sent to a maximum security prison, but all prisons in Norway are considered a step above the rest. The country's prison system has been described as the nicest in the world. In particular, many are focused on Bastøy prison, a minimum security facility where the goal is rehabilitation over punishment. There are reportedly no bars on the windows, kitchens are fully stocked, including sharp knives. Guards and inmates have even developed friendships. In Norway, losing one's freedom is considered enough of a punishment. Instead of looking for retribution, the country addresses crime as a social problem and looks to repair the harm caused by crime rather than punish those responsible, a concept known as restorative justice.
We will return to the idea of restorative justice in a minute. For now, let's just explore the minimum security prison in Norway. These are often referred to as open prisons and are becoming increasingly popular. Let's take a look at an example from Norway. At Halden Prison, inmates live in a room similar to what you may imagine finding in a college or university dorm room. They are free to roam the ground, watch TV, have a cell phone, and even leave to go on a vacation. The inmates here all work at a greenhouse that is on the prison ground, earning a wage which they use to pay their rent and buy groceries. There is very little security. And frankly, if a prisoner wanted to run away, it would not be difficult, as there are no big fences or armed guards. However, this would result in them being sent back to a traditional prison.
It's very interesting, Ibanu, this example we just heard, and I highly respect an initiative of this sort. The Norwegian prison model is a very positive example, as we just heard, but it makes me also think, why are these low quantity of prisoners in jails? Perhaps the OECD, Better Life Index, can answer this question partially. Norway ranks top in personal security, subjective well-being, and ranks above the average in environmental quality, jobs and earnings, income and wealth, education and skills, housing, work-life balance, civic engagement, social connections, and health status. As a result, and surprisingly for me, Norwegians are more satisfied with their lives than the OECD average shows. Therefore, this level of satisfaction could mean that Norwegians will be very unlikely to get involved in unlawful activities.
These are really important questions to ask, Dania. Do you think maybe you could compare it with the situation in your own country?
Well, Amelia, in contrast, in my country, Honduras, the level of disparity and poverty have skyrocketed, compared to Norway, of course. For instance, data from 2016, according to the World Bank, shows that 60.9% of the population lives in poverty, specifically the rural area, where one out of 500 lives in extreme poverty, trying to survive with less than $1.90 per day. This situation can be connected to what Luig claims in his work, Urban Poverty and Juvenile Crime, evidence from a randomized housing mobility experiment. He says that the level of poverty can lead to high levels of stress that in turn may lead individuals to commit theft, robbery, or other violent acts. Therefore, we can see the consequences such as prison overcrowding and the opening and expansion of new prisons. Based on this, I believe that the quantity of money invested in prevention programs has to be revised and put a greater effort into creation and development of sustainable prevention programs.
Yeah, and the issue of prevention is one that we can't overlook. And the access to services and life index of a country is sure to be represented in the quality of life for those who have been incarcerated. However, the attitudes towards prisoners can also be very different, even between countries that have similar GDPs or cultural norms. Personally, I'm from North America, and a lot of the media depictions and cultural attitudes towards prisons and crime is that inmates are all incredibly dangerous individuals and need to be locked up and guarded 24/7. This is what I have been socialized to, but maybe it isn't the case. Nearly one-third of Finland's inmates are serving time in these open prisons we've been talking about, and for a wide variety of crimes. When you treat prisoners as if they're violent and dangerous people, you strip them of their humanity, as opposed to this open prison model, which provides some respect. There is so much othering that happens with criminals, and very little compassion. I think a program like what they have in Finland could change that perception and remind people of their compassion and of the humanity of all people.
Yes, and in addition to that, this program has some other advantages. It's cheaper for one, because there is far less security personnel, and because prisoners contribute by paying rent. But more importantly, the reincarceration rates, or the amount of prisoners who, once they have been released, then commit another crime and are sent back to prison, drop dramatically by about 20%. For prisoners who serve part of their sentence at one of these open prisons.
I suppose a lot of this prison model comes down largely to why we send people to prison in the first place. Is it to separate these offenders from the rest of society to keep the rest of a country safe? To serve justice and ensure that they have been punished for their actions? Or is it to reintegrate them into society so that they will not repeat the same actions? This model in Finland falls largely into the latter group, focusing on rehabilitation. They started testing this model in response to a growing rate of incarceration and research that show that punishment does not reduce crime. So we can see that this open prison model has some benefits for the local community and country. But what about the prisoners? Let's circle back to prison education. What is the access to educational services like this prison model, for example?
Well, in the more traditional prisons that exist in Finland, meaning the non-open prisons, prisoners have access to the internet to take online courses, or even for employment. Now, this isn't granted to all prisoners. Like moving into an open prison, it is a privilege that is earned rather than something that's given to all inmates. However, it does allow prisoners the opportunity to engage in formal education while incarcerated. It would also serve to minimize the culture shock and computer literacy gap that is seen in a lot of prison systems around the world, where individuals are barred from accessing technology during their incarceration and are then released with no skills for our ever-evolving digital world.
Yes, this kind of non-formal education that comes with giving prisoners access to media and technology is apparent in this prison system. In the open prisons, there is also access to formal education, as prisoners are given the opportunity to enroll in courses at local colleges or universities. This allows prisoners to gain new skills and open up new opportunities for employment when they are released. If we take the example of Helden Prison, which we discussed earlier, the prisoners here are employed in the greenhouse where they take care of the plants and sell them to the community. This, too, is a form of education and skills training.
So there are many different types of education that prisoners have access to in this model. This model of incarceration in general follows a concept known as restorative justice. Restorative justice works on the idea that crime causes harm to communities and individuals, and the responses we take to crime should focus on repairing that harm. It is a model that involves all implicated parties, including the offenders and the victims, when coming to a resolution. So a restorative justice program could include criminals and victims meeting with the appropriate authorities to decide on the appropriate action to be taken.
The focus is really on the impact of the crime rather than only seeking justice when we talk about restorative justice. We see this a lot in the Finnish system we just explored. It's an approach in which the offenders are still contributing to society and the communities they've harmed while they serve the punishment for their crimes.
Restorative justice is a concept that is popping up all around the world. and taking many different forms. When we consider prison education and new models of incarceration, this is a question that often comes up. Should the focus and the resources be going towards ensuring that prisoners serve an adequate punishment for their actions, or towards repairing the harm that their actions have caused and ensuring that they aren't repeated?
That's an interesting question, Ibanu, and certainly there are a lot of different answers and models of incarceration around the world, so there isn't necessarily one right answer. However, we can still discuss the idea of an individual's punishment or incarceration time being spent working towards repairing some of the damage that their crimes have caused. The pain that crime causes, especially violent crimes, is unimaginable, and it is not something that can be reversed or removed, especially by a simple apology or even by the rehabilitation of the individual who is responsible for the crime. However, I do believe that there's something to the idea of contributing to society while being incarcerated. This is what we saw largely in our last example in Finland, where inmates had access to society and were contributing to the economy and more while serving their sentences, which is not only less of a drain on the government's resources, but also can reduce the likelihood of them repeating a crime, as we saw. I think there may be room for some kind of positive contributions to society while being incarcerated, or as a sentencing, at least for some crimes.
Thank you, Amelia. I believe the context, socio-political situations, the needs and the reasons behind this incarceration of the inmates can be considered prior taking any action. And I would consider doing both. However, I would put so much effort on the second one. First of all, I really doubt they could repair anything that they already harmed. For example, in the case of sexual abuse, assassination, or other. But what they can think is about how they can change this violent and problematic behavior along with the adequate support. This also makes me think of the other party that has been affected by any violent or illegal activity of the inmates. What would they want for the inmates? It is indeed not an easy answer to reply. But still, what do you do with all the inmates in jails? This takes me back to Honduras, where most of the jails, the inmates do not have those many opportunities of rehabilitation, and instead, they still lead different crimes from jail. This situation has some more other layers that would be difficult to discover. I believe that with all these adult education programs in jail, we need also to regulate and decrease the number of young adults entering to jails. And I believe we have to return to prevention programs. Let's get a more specific view of it. So, what and how do prevention programs work, Ibanu?
It is important to remember that restorative justice is very personal and emotional for everyone involved. What you are talking about now is prevention. And I think we can all agree that a good prevention program for crime is much more useful than an effective prison model. Prevention programs are very diverse, and it is really a broad topic because they can take different forms and target different population or specific behaviors. And education can play a huge role in crime prevention programs. In general, prevention programs are put in place to try to stop crime from happening, specifically predictable problems, but they also promote desired behavior and patterns over time. Prevention programs can be universal and available to the general public, target specific families or population groups, or be treated or intervention programs to reduce the likelihood of repeating behaviors or patterns. A lot of these programs tend to be oriented towards teenagers or children.
Yes, Ibanu, if you think again, it makes sense since all the earlier stages impact greatly during the adult life. However, I feel that we as young adults are expected to behave like adults, cope with all the issues, challenges, adjustment, high levels of stress, loneliness, just to mention a few. And this expression of behave like adults is very unfair because young adults have also needs and expectations, and we need to know how to handle any difficult situation that can lead to even self-destructive behavior. I am using this specific term of young adults because they are one of the most vulnerable when starting adulthood. Why? Because this is the moment where we are just getting out of our adolescence and we are facing a great number of new challenges, such as university, enter to the job market, relationships, family, etc. All this load of new challenges require us to find a balance, and here is where our mental health can be affected at some point. I would like to make our audience aware that prevention programs for young adults can be focused on mental health. We tend to think that having uncertainties on our beliefs, action, high levels of stress, and sometimes substance abuse are issues that can be easily managed in our own. The danger of self-destructive behavior in young adults can also reach others that you care the most. It would be useful to get some ideas for our audience and suggestions. It is really important being aware of these situations, even though it's a bit complicated to find preventive activities specifically designed for young adults. But there are, of course, activities you can do to feel you can cope with problems, whether they happen within yourself or any other external factor. Sometimes it amazes me how people find these chances to cope with these situations in a very practical way. On this, I remember talking to one friend telling me sometimes how she feels about certain situations that are happening and affecting negatively in her life. She tells me that she goes out doing exercise or just walking helps her a great deal on changing her mood. Others say just look at the sky, and others say observe the greenery. Some activities that I find very useful when coping with stress or anxiety are listening to specific music. For example, some composers as Debussy and Bach, which I enjoy the most, I try to listen to them for relaxing when I try to cope with my daily burden. I really recommend these ones.
Today, in the exploration of our topic of prison education, took us more further to Scandinavian prison models to prevention. The importance of discussion of prison education is an issue often neglected by the public and authorities around the world. We hope today's program can raise awareness towards the importance of prison education and hopefully make some change to the overall prison system. This is all we want to share with you today. Thank you for listening and see you next time.